17th, 2017. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the very hot and humid Chicago suburbs. And I hope that that everyone has a happy Father's Day tomorrow. Thanks for joining me on RBN. And, of course, their website is republicbroadcasting.org. You may view the guest lineup for this program at spingola.com. Just click on the radio schedule button on the left and click the year, month and day. Email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Please visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And we will take calls in the third hour at 800-313-9443. Our guest today is Clint Richardson, and his websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And to download the book, you may visit strawmanstory.info. And it's a book that to say that it is not a quick read would be an understatement. It has, 1,147 pages. And it is very interesting.
Well, that's just part one.
Oh, gosh. Amazing. It's just amazing. I can't say that I understand everything I'm reading.
It's different, isn't it?
It is different. It's very different. We've all heard the expression straw man. But you've gone way beyond explaining what it is and why it is. And I think as I was reading, I thought, okay, this all really goes back to the corporation nation concept, which is how I first became introduced to your work. And it all goes back to that. And I see where you got your ideas and your impetus for this book. Am I correct or no?
And to ruin the ending, not that it's to be read as some kind of fictional novel, because this is all just this is the truth of how things work. Not my opinion, this is truly what I've learned, and I try to say that many times in here, that this is not my opinion. This is a collection of ancient knowledge from many sources, and it's an instruction book on the legal law as it is compared to the what you call the unwritten or spiritual law, the moral law, the law of God, the law of nature, however, whatever floats your boat in that regard. What you end up realizing, Deanna, is that it's not just the fact that there are corporations, it's not just the fact that, yes, the nation is a corporation, and it's not just the fact that a state is a city, a county, and everything is also a corporation. That's really a secondary notion, and it's almost a vulgar notion at this point. It's like you have to realize what that actually means. And the only way you can really understand that is from what the Bible warns against, which is that in the end, we will be worshiping artificial persons. Okay, that's what a corporation is defined as a person. And when you're going through the Bible and you're understanding that the Bible is not religion at all, it's law. And it's actually part of the common law, and you realize it's voluntary, of course. It's the unwritten law. It can't be enforced. You can't force somebody to love somebody else. You can't force somebody to live in charity. You can't force somebody, to not use money and to not contract and not to take oaths. You can't force somebody not to respect persons and flattering titles. You can't force these things. But that's exactly what the Bible warns about. What I found out is that everything in the legal law is the opposite of what the Bible warns against. So basically, in the end, what you realize is that the people, this term that we throw around as if we are, so arrogantly that we believe we are the people, it turns out there's no such thing. And that is going to piss a lot of people off. But I'm telling you right now, when you do the research, when you put in triplicate everything as I have, you figure out that, hey, when they were deliberating to sign the Constitution of the United States, they couldn't decide on which word to use, because they mean the same thing. Either we the people or we the states. What is a state? Do you think a man can be a state? And just to clarify, just to make you understand why you are not the people, and no man can be the people, because it's a plural, right. There's a great little thing that I found, and it's real simple. It's just we are considered persons of the United States, not people. You would think that if I were to refer to all the persons of the United States, I would say people.
Right.
But that's just it. You see, the plural of person is persons, not people. Alright, so when you hear this term, we the people, what you're really hearing are we the sovereign states. What is a sovereign state? It's a corporation that is created through the constitutional process. It is not at all in any way any man. And that is what really took me to a whole new level. When I finally understood there is no people, the people is a callous lie that has been used in countless, back in the Aristotelian days. You have people that exposed this, all throughout the revolutions and everything. There is no people. And when I figured that out, then all of a sudden I realized, okay, this is why we're not to respect any persons whatsoever, as the Bible says, because a person is a corporation. A person is something artificial. Every person, the maxim is basically that no man is a person, but every person has to be connected to a man, basically. So, it's such a difficult concept to hear for the first time, but when you realize that this whole thing that we've been talking about since the 60s, for God's sake, from these guys up in the northern part of the country who started all this, like, sovereignty and mythology, the patriot mythology and all this stuff, you realize the whole thing is crap. And I have gone out of my way now, Deanna, to prove that this sovereign, the notion that a man can be sovereign is false. Only the state is sovereign, and the state will then grant a specific status that is always less than the state, because only the state is sovereign. No man and no status of the state can possibly be higher than that which grants the status. This is only logical, right? But in this patriot sovereignty, all these different truth movement mentalities, we somehow believe that we are able to be this free and sovereign and all this stuff, while at the same time being subjects to a government. And it's patently false. And I take that even as far as the Pope and the Queen of England, current Queen, and of course that's just an immortal office that is, we have an immortal Queen, our King of England, and we have an immortal Pope, and yet the man keeps changing. How is that possible? Well, it's a corporation. You see, the title of King and the title of Pope belong to the corporations that they are attached to. The man that operates under the title is not sovereign. The title is sovereign. Where is the title? The title is part of a corporation. We worship, at this moment, we're worshiping Donald Trump as our president, right? Donald Trump is not the president. The president is an office that belongs to the corporation.
Right.
So it is incorrect to say that these men were presidents. The men were just acting in a part of a corporation that we have now been brought to worship. And I'm telling you now, you cannot have a status in society unless you are worshiping what would be then a false god, which is a corporation, a state, a king, a pope. So that's the problem. Where does the law come from? What, you know, the interesting conclusion I came to is that you're going to have a God, because the word God is a generic term that can go from the highest, which is Jehovah, to the very lowest, which is a mayor or a judge of a municipal corporation. They are called gods or magistrates. And that's actually what it says in the Bible. When you read the word God in the Bible, you're reading a word that's been mistranslated on purpose. But most of the time, the Bible's talking about men acting as kings or magistrates, judges, right? When you go to court, you plead to the court. Well, that word actually means pray. You're praying to the magistrate, which means God. So what I'm trying to tell you is you either volunteer to be under the natural law, under God, and that is your law, or you volunteer to enter into one of these societies. You take upon yourself its persona, its status, or its straw man, if you will, and you now follow a law that is against nature, because any law that's in any kind of society or state will be the law of artificial things. Everything we do is artificial. Our status, our person, you know, our job titles, we can't have those things without permission of the state, right? So the state is our God. And that realization, when you get that realization, it's not a matter of whether it's true or not. It's a self-evident truth once you get to that point. It's a matter of getting to that point and getting rid of all the fallacies and all of the mysteries that have been put in front of our past, all the stumbling blocks, the public education, which of course treatises us into this public-minded foolery that we're all part of. So I'm out here, Deanna, now. I'm wondering, I quit everything. I just said I'm going to learn. I'm just going to go in my basement. I'm going to become a monk of my own doing. And I'm going to research, and I'm going to write essentially the guide to how to read the law and how to read the Bible law and compare the two. And now that I've done that, now that I'm coming back out of my hole per se, I don't really know where to go to tell people, hey, you know, I'm like, RBN's not going to want me back because I'm kind of going against the grain at this point. I realized most of the things we talk about are crap in the sovereignty and in the truth movement. There is no truth, because you're talking about artificial things. You're talking about the value of money, which literally doesn't exist. It's not a tangible thing. In fact, the maxims of law even tell you that while everything can be valued in money, money can be valued in nothing. Which means that if I say my house is worth $500,000, well, I'm going to ask you, what's a dollar worth? And the law says that the dollar is worth nothing, therefore you don't actually have anything but a piece of paper, a title that says you have a house. But you don't own any property, you have nothing. And that's essentially, when you get down to the bottom of everything, these corporations that we're calling governments have been set up as pirate coves. They're literally been set up to taint, or to put you in a tainter, which is the birth process, which is called a corruption of blood. That puts you into a different set of law where you're no longer under the have the ability to even be a party to the Constitution, and all of a sudden, everything you own is actually property of the person, the status, the straw man idea that we're talking about. And so you realize that this whole thing was set up to steal everybody's property. Everything you own belongs to government, not you. You just have pieces of paper, dead pledges and mortgages, in dead hands, mortgage, dead pledge. All of these things are just hypothecations on the real. They're simulations of the real thing. So, I mean, the best comparison that I can give you, Deanna, to make you understand what this book is about, is that we are all little characters. You know, when you set up the Monopoly game, and you, I say, I'm going to be the car. Well, I'm going to be Clint Richardson, or I'm going to be Deanna Spingola. I'm going to be the umbrella, or whatever piece is out there. That's what we've done. We've become something we are not. We're the person is property of government. And therefore, anything we do under that name, Clint Richardson, is property of government. That's why we have no rights. That's why everything seems so corrupt. Because we don't have anything, because we're on a monopoly board. And every time we land anywhere on that board, Deanna, we have to pay because we're trespassing. Because we have nothing. We have no lands. We're only allowed on public places. Well, what is a public place? That's property of government. We can't go on private lands. Only the private people of the states have that privilege, right? They have land patents and all that, but we're not able to have land patents. That's another big fallacy that needs to be busted. You see, we are on a permanent monopoly board where everywhere we land is on someone else's land, whether that's government land or whether that's private land, whether that's a corporation, or whether it's the house that we live in while registering that house under the property of another. We are always going to be paying taxes and rents and fees and everything else because we're on a monopoly board where all the houses and hotels and everything else are owned by another.
Indeed.
That is our story.
Ronald McDonald, who's been on RBN numerous times, particularly on John Stettmiller's program, wrote a book, They Own It All, Including You, By Means of Toxic Currency, which I think is kind of a what you're saying.
Well, it's more accurate. When you're talking about money, you're talking about the one product that the United States actually has. Money is the product of every nation. Every nation is owned by its currency. When we value a nation by its currency, right? We compare our currencies. Oh, the dollar's worth 98 cents compared to the pound, and $1.35 compared to the euro, and this, and right? So that's how we're comparing the value or the product of the nation, right? So the product of the nation, again, all money in whatever form that you see it, whether it's credit or debt, whether it's paper cash, any kind of currency, get this through your head, it's property of government. Anytime you're in a position where you're using the property of another, then you are now bound by the law of that property holder. So when we attach ourselves to the citizenship, the vessel in commercial, currency, well, no, we're bound to this law because we're acting in its person, because we're spending its money, and because we're spending its money, we're now in a tacit agreement. We're expressing the will, if you will, to be under the law because we're spending the government's currency. We're using the property of another. Anytime you use the property of another, if you go rent a car, you're under the law of the car agency and of the state for which it's beholden. You don't make up the rules. You don't get to say, well, I'm going to only pay you this much and I don't need insurance. No, you have to follow the law of the property owner. And that is what controls us.
Wow. Alrighty, we're going to take a real quick 3-minute break. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson, and we are talking about his book, and you may download that book at strawmanstory.info. And when you refer to the Bible, are you referring to any particular section? Because I think there's a big variance between the Old Testament and the New Testament. Is it?
Sure. The Old Testament or the Mosaic Law is really it is best I, the the way that it was explained to me, and then at that point I went and I searched to verify that it was true, and is to say that the new law, what you would call in which the state actually refers to as true Christianity, not religion, not any religion. Please keep that in mind. True Christianity is the following of the teachings of Jesus Christ, okay? That is, in and of itself, completely separate from any church, any religion. The church is actually a people, not a building, not a corporation. Every church now is a corporation, right? So, and they deal in money and mammon. The Vatican has its own bank, for God's sake. I mean, imagine Jesus Christ walking into the Vatican bank. I mean, if Jesus Christ, let's face it, if Jesus Christ walked into a church today, he'd be wearing probably some robes that he's been having on for a few days. He wouldn't have the perfumes and the oils that would hide his stench. And he would walk in and he would want to speak to the people, and they'd probably throw him out because they think he's a bum.
Right,
because there is no church anymore. There's only corporations that are misleading people away from the Bible. You notice, Deanna, everything is designed to make you hate the Bible. If they can make you hate religion or love religion, either way, you're not going to ever read the Bible. You see, that's the important aspect of this. Either way, you're steered away from the Bible. Bible says read the Bible, take no other doctrine, which means law, before, right? So you're going to a church, you're sitting there, and you're taking the doctrine that has nothing to do with the Bible. They're never going to read some of the things I'm going to read to you today, because that would then show that these churches are completely outside of and ignoring and doing the opposite of what the Bible says to do. Even the notion of public worship is against the Bible. So when you're talking about the old law, why do the Jews hate the new law? Why do the Jews hate Christianity? All right, it's not that they hate Christ. That would be silly. Christ is not a character that, you're hating a character in a book. It'd be like hating Robin Hood or King Arthur, right? They don't hate the character Christ. What they hate is that Christ is a personification of God's law. When I refer to Christ, I'm referring to a story about a man who is walking the natural law, the right-hand side of God, basically, right? It's the righteous path. It's the path that will always keep you out of all these legal trappings. That's what it is. Why do the Jews then hate the new law? Why is the word Jew, which is Ayudios or Yahudi in the Bible, which means he who is against Christ, i.e. against the new law, right? He is against Christianity. Why do the Jews hate the new law? Well, of course they hate it, because the new law says no money, no usury, no none of the things that you allow yourself to do in the old Mosaic law. So let's take the old law, and let's pretend and anthropomorphize it into a brick wall. All right, so here's this giant wall that you're on one side of it, and your mission or your goal, which is evil, is on the next side. Well, sorry, the law is there. It's a big wall of bricks, and you can't get to your goal, right? Now, the old law says thou shalt not kill. But that's all it says. It doesn't say anything else, right? So the important part about the old law is that wall of bricks, it has no mortar. So there's giant holes that you can get through, giant all kinds of ways that you can bypass the old law. And the most important way that they figured out to bypass that law, that old law, is the notion of the person, the straw man.
Right. All righty. We have a 3-minute break. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson, and we are talking about his book, strawmanstory.info is where you can download it. And tell us, Clint, and then let's get back to the analogy of the wall. But t- tell us what exactly a straw man is.
Well, this goes along with the analogy of the wall, because then you can understand, when we start talking about the straw man, you can actually understand what it means. So if you have this wall, but the wall has a bunch of loopholes, ways to get around the law, right? That is the best way to describe the old law, the Mosaic law. It's not a complete law, in other words. And the new law is said, or Christ, i.e. the personification of the new law, is said to come and fulfill that law, which basically leaves you no way to get around this wall. So with the old law, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. Those are very, very simple, simplistic terms that obviously were man-made. they were made with the caveat that they could be worked around, they could be deceitful. So what I'm trying to say is that when the Bible says do not, or the Ten Commandments say do not kill, do not steal, let's look at how many different ways we can get around that law. Okay, so I'm going to say, well, I'm not going to steal, but I'm going to create a persona, which in Latin means mask. I'm going to create a status, a dummy, a straw man, a person, right? And I'm going to act as that person for someone that's in the military, let's say. Well, I didn't kill anybody. I was a soldier. I had a flattering title, and I was operating under a person of the United States. It wasn't me that did the killing. It was the person with the flattering title. Okay, see, the old law never says don't respect persons, don't respect flattering titles. But see, now I've found out a way to both kill and steal and break every law by simply not acting as myself, but instead acting as a status, a person.
Right.
And that way, now I'm under the legal law. And you see, when something is legalized, that just means to be made lawful. So all of a sudden, to kill is legal, now it's lawful. It just magically happens because of the legal language and the legal system. Because it's not you that's doing it. It's the property of a corporation, a government.
Right.
The person, a fictional entity did it, not you. So all of a sudden you figure out, well, all I have to do is go under contract to work for a corporation or a government as a mercenary hireling, and I can break all the laws I want to because I'm going to follow the man's law instead of God's law or the law of nature. Everybody knows killing is wrong. But if I do it in person, then I don't have to have a conscience. I can be irresponsible for my own actions, which is the number one precept of the natural law, the law of nature, God's law. You must be responsible for all your actions. But if I have insurance, if I have all these things that back up my ability to break the law, including to act in the property of another, well, then I'm not breaking the law, am I? I got an excuse. But hey, what's the excuse? There is no excuse before God. You're not going to be able to go up to I mean, hypothetically, when you're talking about these things, you have to be able to embrace the metaphor. So let's just pretend that you're going to face God. Whether you believe it or not, I don't really care. The point is you're trying to explain the law in a way that makes it a moral law, that makes it, you tell these stories in a way that make them, make someone be able to understand the story. That's why you anthropomorphize characters and you personify the law into a man named Jesus Christ so you can follow Christ. When you say following the Christ, you're saying follow the law, right? Because he's your example. So you're literally, all of a sudden the new law comes, right? And it's the anti-Jewish law, because remember, Jewish means to be against Christ or against the Christian or new law. So the new law comes along. What is the new law? The new law is all of the the plaster, all of it's like a big shrink wrap over that wall so that there's no more holes in that wall. You can't get around it. You can't go over it anymore. Okay? There is no excuse for you anymore because the new law says never respect persons or flattering titles, never take oaths.
Oh, that's, never do yes. any.
So now all of a sudden you have this impenetrable wall of law that you cannot go around unless you are either, like us, completely dumbed down and ignorant of the law, specifically of the Bible law, of the new law, the moral law, the law, the unwritten law, which is, again, part of the common law according to the courts, right? You either follow it or you follow the false gods of the nations. And the Bible says, it's very clear, all the gods of the nations are idols. It's speaking of your presidents, your kings, your popes. They're all idols. We're worshiping idols, right? That's what we're doing in these artificial persons. That's what the United States is. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that if that bothers people, it's just the truth. And the truth can never really harm you unless you want to live in the lie. And so I'm looking for people who want to get out of the lie.
Right.
So that's an explanation of the law and how to get around it through personhood, through a straw man, right? So when we're talking about this word straw man, I want to clear the air because there's a lot of people who don't like that word or they've heard it before and they've tried to follow the path and they just can't figure it out. Or it leads somewhere and it's been equated to some of these false, you know, leaders, these false gurus who lead people down roads and they get in trouble, they go to jail. So there's a lot of people who think this word straw man is somehow not real or it's not part of the law or it's illegitimate. And I'm here to tell you it's very legitimate. It's just a word, first of all, so to have such a reaction to it is kind of ridiculous. It's just a word that means a certain thing, and it's referring to this person, this status that we're all acting in. Again, that status that allows us to break the old law, but not the law of God, the law of Christ, basically Christianity, true Christianity, not religion. Religion is something else. This is the law. The Bible is the law. If there's one thing I want people to take away from this, the Bible is the law. It is not religious. You're to follow it religiously in your actions, which is the difference between a religion, which is just a name, an empty name, an empty vessel, an empty corporation. But when you start actually acting according to the law, which is illegal, by the way, if you're a person of the United States, you have no right to act according to your moral law. You can't. It's illegal.
So just by having a Social Security number, we become a straw man or straw person.
Well, it's a whole process because that it starts with a birth certificate, and okay. as you go, which is the creation of a legal entity. It has nothing to do with you whatsoever. You're not attached to it in any way. You don't have to use it. It's sitting there, a completely avoidable thing. And as you start growing up, your parents were firstly induced into informing on you. When you inform on somebody, you're informing somebody as a criminal or a felon. So you're automatically, this person is automatically basically a felon, right? But it's not you. It's an artificial structure. It's completely, well, I'll put it to you this way, and people can understand this. Deanna, if I'm sitting here and I'm trying to tell you, let's say we're both in the movie, the Matrix, right? That computer program, that simulation of life, that these people are actually in pods, but they've got all these things hooked up to them, and they believe they're in this world, right? And they can see each other. They have a projected self-image. They dress the part. They wear uniforms. They do all these things. And we all believe that we're inside, you know, we're in real life. But in fact, it's a computer simulation, right?
Right.
You can say the same thing about the legal jurisdiction. There is no such thing as a jurisdiction unless you believe it, unless you walk in it, unless you appear in its person, its persona, its mask. So if I walk up to you in the Matrix and I say, hey, this is not really you, you're going to like look at yourself, you're going to touch yourself, and you're going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course that's me. I'm saying, no, you are not Deanna Spingola. That is not you. But you got to look at yourself and you say, no, of course it's me. What are you talking about? No, this is your person. This is your apparition. You're appearing as Deanna Spingola in a jurisdiction, a legal jurisdiction or a legal matrix, if you will. And it's but it's not you. You know, you've got two different concepts. You've got the real you and the simulation of you, which is this straw man, this persona that you're acting in. Right? If I was to do that, you'd think I'm nuts.
Right.
But in fact, that's exactly the perfect description of what is actually happening. I'm a person of the United States. I'm in a place, which is a jurisdiction, and everything that I touch has a legal name or noun placed upon it, which is property of government. The language itself is property of government. See, we don't realize this, but every single thing, everything we do out there, if I'm a doctor, then I speak in proprietary terms, property of government. If I'm a scientist or a botanist, I'm speaking in terms that are accepted by these associations and that I need to know in order to get a flattering title that says I'm a botanist or a doctor. If I'm a lawyer, I need to...
And you have to have a license from the state in order to practice.
Exactly. Guess what license actually means?
Tell us.
Yeah, this is something that no one can ever guess because you have to think like they do. License is a synonym for anarchy or lawlessness.
Really?
Why would you need a license except to break with the natural law? A license is something that they give you, and it is a license. It's a permission to do something which is not lawful. Why else would you need a license? So you look up the synonym, the definition. It's lawlessness. License literally means lawlessness. And that, when you get concepts like that, and you understand the dualism that is the legal language, you realize... All these words that we cherish in the legal version, for instance, freedom means franchise. Liberty means franchise. But wait a minute, I'm a free citizen. I'm a free subject. Wait a minute, how can I be subject and free? Oh, okay, it means franchise. I'm like a McDonald's that has a mother corporation. And that's exactly what a person or a straw man is. So let me go through some legal... Now, keep in mind, in this book, there are over 2,000 definitions of words.
Oh, I saw. Oh, my gosh. Incredible.
There are over 300 Bible verses that go along with that, all kinds of concordance entries, all the lexicons, all the old words, so that you understand what these things actually mean. And you got to understand, when I say anything in the legal language, it is always opposite. It is always a lie. It is always... Always opposite to what I intend.
Clint, the one thing that I have always admired about you is that you always go to the very first primary source for whatever you are studying. You don't read other people's books and get ideas there. You go to the record itself, which I've always admired about you in your research.
Well, I appreciate that, and I wish more people would realize that, because you can't often reflect that in your rhetoric. You know, you can't often to transfer cold hard facts that come from financial reports and dictionaries and stuff into something that someone can understand. Makes you sound like you're stating your own opinion, when in fact nothing I'm saying today is my opinion. I got to tell you, when I talk to people now, I talk to people, hey, if I was a judge, this is what I would tell you. If I was in this position, this is what I would tell you. I'd start with the maxims of law, which are the very principles and foundation of law. I would go to the point where the foundation either helps you or hinders you, and generally that point is that the contract always makes the law. So once you enter into contract, everything changes. You're now under contract, the law of the contract. Well, guess what? Personhood, citizenship is a contractual relationship. So by being under contract, whether it's tacit or expressed, doesn't matter, Remember, it's not your system. You don't get to decide what things mean. I'm only interested in the way things are, not the way things you want them. You know, see, the problem with the truth movement, the patriot movement, the sovereignty movement, the liberty movement, and whatever we're calling it nowadays, is that we're always talking about the way we think things should be. We always want them to be the way we know they should be. We don't really know where we get these ideas of how things should be. Most of them come from the Bible. And we never give Bible a credit to the Bible. Most of the famous quotes that come from founding fathers, etc., all come from the Bible. But we never quote the Bible because we're taught that the Bible is somehow bad. And of course, if you want to rule a people, you're going to keep them away from the one thing that will free them. And I got several quotes that I can read you from people who say that if Horace Greeley, editor of the New York Post, said Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. A Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. That's from one of the bad guys. That's from one of the
exactly.
Blood guys, right? Yes. A Bible-reading people cannot be enslaved. That alone should make you want to read the Bible. Your problem is the Bible's written in English, and that's a whole other subject. Because what I found is that English was a language created to make us dumb. It's a language of illiteracy, literally.
And it's getting more illiterate as we progress through life.
Yeah. You can't read the Bible in English. That's what I found out. That's why this book is just a translation after translation of these words, so that you know what the Bible's actually telling you. And I'm gonna read some passages from you to you that most people would never have even contemplated what it means. Because you don't stop and say, well, what does that word mean? I'm going to go to the Greek or the lexicons for the Chaldean or the Hebrew or the Latin, right? But I'm just going to keep reading even though I have no idea what this is actually telling me. And that, of course, leads to false logic, because you think you know what it means, but you have no idea what these words in the Bible actually represent. The best example of that is God. Because the word God was used for about 20, 30 different words. Every time you read the word God in the Bible, sometimes it's capitalized, sometimes it's not. It has a different meaning, and you have to know that meaning. Otherwise, you end up blaming God for everything.
Right. All righty. We do have a three-minute break. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. And you may download his book at strawmanstory.info. Now, I note in your book and you were talking before about sometimes the word God is capitalized and sometimes it is not. And I note in your book that mid-sentence you will have capitalized words, which I think is obviously purposeful.
Yes.
And because it means something that...
It's unorthodoxly written. I had to figure out a way to be able to tell the story of two different worlds, one fictional, one reality,
right.
One of nature, one of artifice. And so every time you see a capitalized word, it's meant to trigger, okay, he means reality instead of fiction or legal.
Exactly.
A legal term.
Okay.
Right. And that's unorthodox, but I was like, how else can I teach? How else can I possibly put such a crazy idea together as to teach this to people? Because I knowing this alone is worthless. It's not going to do me any good to have all this knowledge, this ancient knowledge, not my own knowledge, please. My ego's dead at this point. This is stuff that everybody needs to know. There's no reason for you to read any book, to read the Bible, to read the law, until you actually discover, like I said, these words in the Bible, what they really mean. You might as well put the Bible down. You have never read the Bible unless you've gone and you've looked at every word in the concordances and the lexicons in different languages, which, by the way, are completely poetic and metaphoric. And everything in the Bible is a metaphor. It's not a history in any way, shape, or form. And people don't like to hear that. People don't like to hear. They want to believe that it's a history. There's no dates in the Bible. It's not a history. History is something that's used by tyrants. History is something that is used by the victors to control people, because if you control history, you control law, you control the present and the future. Prophecy and parable are timeless, and that's the point of the Bible. It's a timeless document, not a history. It is a document or a parable. A parable is the telling of a moral story to cause you to walk on the moral or straight path, right? That is not history. That is something, and basically all that means, Deanna, is that if you ask me a question, and this is one of the most important unwritten lessons in the Bible, in my opinion, is that Jesus always spoke in public, he always spoke in parables, but in private he would always speak directly to his disciples, right? But in public he's always going to speak in parable. What is a parable? A parable is simply a way to tell you, without directing the comment at you personally. In other words, you can't sue me for what I'm saying because I'm not directing it towards your person, right? I'm allowing myself to talk freely without any offense. I would tell you, if you asked me something, I would simply tell you, well, Deanna, the wise man would follow this path, while the fool would follow this path. I have answered your question in a beautiful way, and there's no way it can offend you.
Right. All right. We are at the top of the hour. We will be right back in 3 minutes. And our guest today is Clint Richardson, and you may download his book. It's over 1,100 pages, full of more information than, I just don't know how you put this all together, Clint. You did a lot of work. I mean, you said that you were down in your basement and you were acting like a monk. It's very obvious that is what you were doing, researching, and it's just a remarkable work. Anyway, people can download that book at strawmanstory.info. And you were talking about the parables that that Jesus used that are timeless, and I suppose that the listeners could apply them or not, and so it gave them the freedom to accept the wisdom that he was offering or not, without any.
Right. Yes. In other words, I've not spoken to you personally. I've not addressed your name in public, and therefore you can't take me to court. You can't say that I've slandered you. You can't say that I've ruined your good name or have somehow harmed you, because I didn't speak directly to you. I simply said, you have two or three paths, and you may choose to follow either one. The wise man, however, according to the dictates and laws of nature, would follow this path. The fool would follow this path. You haven't put yourself in any kind of position where a litigious jerk out there would try to take you to court and sue you.
Right.
It's brilliant. I mean, everybody should be speaking this way. This is a poetic, metaphoric way of addressing each other, and it's beautiful, it's wonderful once you get used to it. It's like, oh, God. And see, what happened to me, Deanna, is what needs to happen to everybody out there. You know, I've been doing this radio stuff, thanks to you and RBN, I've been doing this radio stuff, and I've been, I've come on here, and I've said I think things should be, and I've done this, and I've learned that, but it wasn't until I actually read the Bible and I opened my mind. I said, I'm going to take the advice of some other people. I'm going to try to forget everything I've learned, and I'm going to read this thing as it is. I'm going to forget what everybody's told me. I'm going to forget my hatred of the church, the organized church. I'm going to read the Bible, because everything I keep coming across keeps coming back to the Bible. Why do I put my hand on the Bible in court? That's not just there's a reason for that, and I'll tell you what that reason is. When you put your hand on the Bible, you're blaspheming the Bible. you're taking, the Bible tells you to take no foolish oaths. Take no oaths and follow follow no other doctrine. For God's sake, that means follow no other law. You're putting your hand on the Bible in front of a false freaking God, saying that you are something other than what God created you. You're a person, and you're putting your hand on the Bible and saying, I swear to tell the truth, in a situation where everything is a freaking lie.
Yes.
Do you see how that works? Why do they have you put your hand on the Bible? Because you're turning your back on God's law. You're accepting the contract law.
Talking about Bibles, did you read the King James Bible and understand that King James got a bunch of people together and they kind of rewrote things the way that they wanted to?
That's why I did this, because I realized what the king did was to, because, you know, the king is God.
Right.
So even the founding fathers of America referred to the king as their God, and that all natural rights came from God, but they're not talking about rights of the real natural rights. They're talking about that whole Luciferian agenda, right? So the king naturally is going to say that every king in the Bible is a god, every judge, every, you know, what is God like is also going to be used for God. That's why you have to, because we only have, again, remember, the English language is designed to be a language of illiteracy. It's actually called dog Latin. In other words, we bark like dogs. Like when they say we're animals, animal means without soul. Anima and all takes away. Anima means soul. Animal. We're soulless. Okay, to them. That's their figurative language. They call us four-footed beasts, and therefore we speak dog Latin. Okay? That is a term. That is, it means the Latin grammatical set in the put together in the English language. It is the difference between a literalist and a poet, basically. The literalist is the English language speaker, right? I see a rock, I call it a rock, I mean it's a rock. But all the other language, yes, someone, for instance, that speaks Greek, they say there is no translation for Greek into English. It's impossible because we speak beautifully, we speak poetically, we speak metaphorically about everything. It's not the same. It's an impossible language. It would be like putting math into a speakable language. It's impossible. You just can't do it, right? So we're. It doesn't matter, Deanna, which Bible you read, and I say that with caution because what you should be doing is, no matter which Bible, I say read the King James 1611, or go one step up and read the King James Version. I based mine on the King James Version because it is the law, right? When you look at the King James Bible, it actually says it is property of the crown. Okay. It is literally the law, the common law. You can't. There's no getting around that, unfortunately. And the common law of England was transferred over to the American law. And so what other Bible would you read than, of course, the law, right? Because that's how it – because you have to understand the Bible in the way that your adversary, the king, the president, the crown, and the United States, which is just a corporation of it, you have to understand your adversary. So you have to read it not with your own – wants and desires and wanting to have things be the way you've always known, because you're dumb, because you've been dumbed down, as everybody knows. But nobody wants to seem to admit that I'm dumb. It's just everybody else is dumb, right? No. See, this is the great breakdown of the ego, is when you start reading the Bible and you realize every time the Bible says the fool will do this, and the man will choke on his own conceit, the parable, you know, in that is spoken to the foolish man is as a dog that returns to its own vomit, right? I'm going to tell you a parable, you're not going to believe me, you're just going to keep on barking all this stuff that you've been taught, and in other words, you're going to parabolically or metaphorically, you're just going to return to your own vomit and eat it right back up. The term dumb ass comes from the Bible. the dumb ass will do this. I mean, it's brilliant. I love it. So every time I found that every time the Bible was talking about the fool and the wrong path, it was pointing to me. It was calling me the fool. And once you suddenly realize how foolish you've been, that you've been following fiction, lies that are confirmed to be truths, right? That you've been acting so idiotically, and we know that that's happening. It's just that we can't come to that breaking point where we admit it to ourselves. That's what really got me, is that every time I saw that the Bible was calling someone a fool, it's not referring to any one man. It's referring to whoever's reading the Bible. I didn't ever qualify for the wise man. I always qualified as the fool. And if you start reading it, you'll understand what I mean. But so here's the problem with the quote-unquote versions and translations and everything. Why I say it doesn't matter which Bible you read in a sense is because if you want to understand what the Bible says, you're going to have to go back to the concordances, to the older Romantic languages to understand the metaphor, to understand the explanation of the word, because half the time the word means something. Just like in the legal language, the word means something different. So the common English language we speak is always, almost always, opposed to or opposite of the legal language. So when you read the Bible in English, it's almost always not what you think it is. And that was purposeful. That's the idea. It's not that different, Deanna, than the fact that the Catholic Church would always read the Bible in Latin. Latin being a dead language, everybody's going, well, I don't understand this, but it sure sounds nice.
Huh.
Well, why not just create a language of illiteracy and have everybody read that, put a Bible in every freaking hotel, have it everywhere. It's everywhere. It's accessible everywhere you go. It's the most popular book in the world, and yet none of us have read it because we speak English.
Now, so, I have read it numerous times, but... When I was reading it, I was reading it with the idea that it was only true as far as it was translated correctly. So there was a stipulation in there that, well, some of it might be true and some of it might not be true.
Sure.
There's always these ramifications that influence your thinking and your perception.
This is why you have to take every single word. Every time the word God comes up, well, what does that mean? Who actually created, in the beginning, who created the earth? Elohim, the gods. Well, what are they creating? They're creating the fictional realm. They're creating the matrix. They're creating the artificial realm. It's the Babylonian freaking creation story, and you know that because they were still worshiping all the Babylonian gods.
Sure.
I have that in my book. That wasn't a reference to Jehovah, which is existence in itself. That was a reference to the Elohim.
What about the word love in the Bible? Somebody in the chat room asked that question. What does the word love mean in the New Testament when it says God is love?
You have to understand the definition of God. See, this is nobody ever asks. Like, if I give you a book about a subject, right, and about a man or whatever, and you don't even know what that word means. Hey, this is a book about God. Well, wait, what is God? You think you know? Because everybody I know has a different opinion about what God is, right? I mean, how many people do you know that have the same opinion about what God is? If I ask you what God is, you're going to balk. You're going to say, well, it's, he or she or it or that. Or nobody can define God. So you're reading a book. You come across the word God. You have no idea what it means. That's ridiculous. When all the time you could have actually looked it up. What was the intent of the writer? What was the intent of the word in the Hebrew? What was the word supposed to be? And what you find out is that every time the word God is used, there's only one time where it's referring to the true essence of god of monotheism, if you will, and that is the word Jehovah, which can be said many different ways. Yah, Jehovah, Yahovah, depending on, it doesn't matter, because you're going back, no matter what words you come across in the Bible, Deanna, you always go back to the source. You go back to the original language it was written in so you can understand the metaphor. All right, you got the literal word. This church, this rock is what my church is built on. Okay, I understand what a rock is because I speak English. It's a literal term, but it's a metaphoric term meaning people, meaning real people. The church is built on the people, not a rock.
Oh.
The rock is a metaphor for people, like-minded, law-abiding people. That is the foundation of the church. Church doesn't mean building. It doesn't mean corporation. It doesn't mean anything but a people. But the legal version is the opposite of that. It's everything not of reality. The corporation, the bylaws, the this, the that, right? So everything is opposite. So you can read the Bible in English. You can get the literal term, but you'll never. It's not going to do any good because you're not getting the metaphor. And everything is basically metaphoric or, you know, parabolic, or, you know, Christ is it's an aphorism. It's a, you know, there's all kinds of words that fit there. Allegory, right? So when I go and I look at the original word, it's quite opposite to, generally, quite opposite to what I would have imagined. And so, you know, I think for me, Deanna, the only reason I figured this out was because I just happened to do, I happen to follow purely coincidentally. I just happened to get into, you know, those. I got into the legal system, the legal law first. I got into the financial reports. I understood that everything's a corporation, that everything's fake, everything's false, nothing is real, and everything's a lie in the legal system. And only at that point, when you come to the conclusion that, hey, everything we talk about in this truth movement is actually referring to something that is not true, but we confirm the lie and make it a truth. We confirm the
just repeat it. There are so many. Well, for instance, the idea that the Federal Reserve Act was passed by a small minority of people during Christmas vacation, and that
check the record.
Form. And you set the record straight by going to the record.
Right.
And, I mean, that just turned everything that we had believed about the Federal Reserve Act and the truth movement. I mean, it just...
Well, yeah, of course I get a lot of hate for that because people want to believe in the lie. The lie is so much easier than the truth. The truth hurts until you get to the place... Until you get to the place, which is what the Bible tries to get you to, where you live only in truth. You don't accept fiction of any kind. You don't want technology. You don't want any of this stuff that they're giving us now to completely defeat us. And we're in the final days. And outright, you know, you can take that however you want. But my God, look at what's happening to people. Look at addiction to computers and games and everything.
Oh,
we're in
terrible.
That stage. We're in the stage. And all these things in the Bible I don't think could be understood until this modern age. Because, I mean, how do you understand, for instance, the language of Babel? What is the modern language of Babel? It's computer code.
Oh.
Everybody out there can watch a television program that is being broadcast. What is a television program? It's like The Matrix. It's a bunch of symbols and words that go so fast that all of a sudden it creates a picture. Right? It's translated into a tube, and that, well, not a tube, we don't have tubes anymore. It's translated into a digital picture, and you think you're watching the real thing, but all you're really watching is a bunch of code.
Sure.
And yet, every person, every ethnic person, no matter what your country, whatever your language is, can understand that code because it's coming to you in the most magical way of all, which is visual imagery.
Sure.
And then you just have to, all you have to do is add a language track. Now everybody's seeing episodes of Friends. Everybody's seeing this, and everybody's starting to become the same culture. And we're building that Tower of Babel, figuratively, right? It's to the point where... we're going to have to, the gods, you know, the metaphor is that God's going to come and knock down the tower, and so we're all going to go back, and we're going to be separated, and we're only going to speak our own languages again, because we don't have technology, which is a word that means art, or artifice, technology, art. We don't have art anymore. We don't have fiction to bring us together in an evil way like that.
Sure. Could we get back to that question? God is love. Says that, yes. So what is love? And, of course, the person in the chat room indicated that love has been so misused that...
Well, so, absolutely.
It's become totally sexualized.
Right. And that's not love. That's just nature. when you're talking about love, the higher love, the true love, is the love of God, which means nature. Okay? God is just Jehovah. We have to define God. What is the intention of the writers of the Bible? What does the word God mean when it's used in its highest form, which is, you know, you could say love, charity, whatever, existence. So the word Jehovah is a verb. So one of the most spiritual experiences I ever had in my life was the realization that the word God, or the word Jehovah as it's meant, is a verb, an action, existence itself.
Alrighty, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. We're talking about his book, which you may download at strawmanstory.info. And actually, I was thinking, I have read the Bible numerous times, taught it numerous times, but I'm just simply going to go through your book and save myself a lot of trouble of looking up the things that you have done the work for us.
Right. In no way should this be considered a replacement for the Bible. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
What I'm saying is that the language of the Bible has to be unveiled from its old source material. And so, again, when we see the word God, we have to know and distinguish what. And every time you see the word God, I kid you not, you have to go back. Sometimes it means God-like or Theos. Sometimes it's Elohim. Sometimes it's a God or magistrate. Sometimes it's words you've never heard of, Kios, and Archon is another one that it was replaced by the word God. So, wait a minute. How many gods can you possibly have? And the answer is unlimited. Anybody that is under or a sovereign, the sovereign is God. Well, who's our sovereign? The United States? Every state is a sovereign in and of itself. That's why you can't be higher than the state. That's your God. The people, which is a corporation, is your God. What is the people? The people is a combination of the 50 states. That's it. They have representatives. Those representatives aren't there for us. Therefore, the people... The private persons, the private citizens of those states, which is the bloodline of the kings of England. That's why, you know, we could go, that's a whole other topic, but Barack Obama is one of those. He's a white person. We talked about that on another show. I'm like, dude, Barack Obama's white. What are you talking about? See, the problem is you look at skin color, I look at blood. I look at inheritable blood, because that's what the law tells me to look at. You might look at the skin color and say, yeah, he's just a black guy. No, he's actually a very prominent white guy from the Dunham clan of landholders in Connecticut and elsewhere. It was very important to understand that you didn't have a black president. He's not a black man.
His mother, he certainly didn't act like one. His wife didn't act like one. His mother was white.
And Jewish. And a porn star. it's crazy. It's crazy. So when we're talking about, you hear these terms, and all these corny terms that have appeared in the religious circuits, you know, being born again and all those things, when you understand what they actually mean, they become just these beautiful concepts. But they're just so belittled in all these churches and all these, you know, it's pathetic to watch any of these evangelist preachers and stuff. They're misleading people like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's almost everything they say is just absolutely against the Bible. I mean, for God's sake, the new law is against money in any shape or form, against usury, against anything to do with money. Gold and silver included, right? But these preachers are always going to say, hey, pray to God for money. Wait a minute. Pray to God for mammon. You can only have two master, one God, God or mammon, but you want me to pray to mammon. Pray to God to receive money or mammon.
Right.
How can you possibly be so ignorant out here in our population that we don't understand instantly that if I pray for money, I'm praying for something satanic, which just means, again, a word, it's just a word, Satan, right? All that means is something adversarial to nature, to reality. Money doesn't exist in any actual valuation except what you believe. And that's the trick, is make believe. It's all magic, right? So the word God, when we say God is love, Jehovah. Now, there was no J, so it was actually Yahovah. Yah was a shortcut. You know, it doesn't matter because your intent is all that matters. And I say this in the beginning of my book. I say, look, if your objective when you're reading the Bible is evil, you're going to get evil. If your objective is good, you're going to get good. If your objective is to disprove the Bible, you're going to disprove it as a history. If your objective is to do what I did, which is to say, what the heck does this thing actually say? That's what you're going to get. And that's why you have to forget all your preconceived notions. I'm not telling you anything but what the Bible actually says and what its words are actually intended to be in their meaning. And Jehovah, God, when we say that as the highest possible God or source, the name of the supreme being.
Right.
Oh, I remember these commercial breaks and how much I hated them.
All righty. But, we have to have them. All right, right back in 3 minutes. Pat, this is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. You may download his book at strawmanstory.info. And we do have commercials. If we didn't have commercials, we wouldn't be airing this program today. So
I get it. The book is free, by the way, because this is not something I'm printing the book here in the next few weeks. It should be done, hopefully. But the PDF version is absolutely free. Because this has to be understood. I got it, from all the stuff that I've been through since 9/11, basically learning all this stuff, it wasn't until I reached, I never thought I'd actually get to the point where I could see the whole damn thing and how it's put together. But I tell you, this is how it works. This is how everything works. And it's not what you expect because it's the belief in lies. It's the belief in things that aren't real and true. That's the magic. That's the spell that we're under. Spelling of words, right? So I've got to tell you, Deanna, when you get this concept, the whole Bible will change. Whatever you thought of God or whatever your picture of it was, whether you believe in it or not. And the beautiful thing about the atheist, and we'll defeat atheism. Atheism is the simplest thing to defeat once you understand what the meaning of God actually is, or Jehovah. Atheism just goes out the window. It's defeated instantly. You have to be a fool to be an atheist at that point. And I say that as a former person who didn't believe in God. Well, what is it that's causing me not to believe in God? When I don't even know what the definition of God is intended to be. So when I go back, I see, okay, Jehovah is the scripture name of the supreme being. Now, I can't stop there. I can't just say, oh, okay, well, there's a supreme being. Remember, we're talking about a verb. So when I say being, I mean existence itself. I mean, look around you at nature. That is God. I mean, look out into the universe as far as you can look. That is God. That is Jehovah. It is the supremacy of being. It is not a being. It is being in and of itself. It's a verb. And I can't stress that enough. It's an action. So it's the name from the Hebrew substantive verb, a word that denotes the permanent being or the permanent existence of all things as it goes in a timeless sense. As the primary sense of the substantive verb in all languages, and it means to be fixed, to stand, or to remain and abide. In other words, it's what exists despite man's creation, okay? When I say that something is a creation of God, all I'm saying is that it's not man-made. You don't have to go any further than that knowledge to understand why the word creation is so important. Not to balk at it, not to say, oh, my God, is that one of those religious freaks? No. Creation is what is of nature, what is of God, what is of existence or self-existence. And that is actually the very most important concept, is what is self-evident and self-existence. What exists in reality, in nature, that is not man-made, that is God. And guess what? That includes every one of us, right? So you got to realize that we are all parts of one being, one thing. You can't, when you just stop, forget everything else you've learned, and just concentrate on what I'm saying, this is an undeniable, self-evident truth. Okay, it is all that is in being. No matter what it turns out to be, no matter what Pluto turns out to be, a planet or a moon, I could frankly care less. It's not going to affect my life. But people that get stuck on that kind of thing. So you gotta just say, just stop and just say, okay, God is existence itself. God is a verb that means all that is in being, all that is living, all that is happening, all that is. And that's why they say, what is the name of God? Well, I am that I am, right? So that is another way of saying I am what is self-evident. I don't need the names, the titles, the persons. I need nothing from man to exist. I created, man is a part of me, you know, being, again, trying to be metaphoric and trying to be, it's the only way you can talk about it, right, is to tell it in the story, personify God as a man or personify it. But you have to understand. So when the Bible says that you're to have eternal life, I hate to break it to you, folks. I'm not going to sit here and say there's no heaven or no whatever. What I will say is that in the Bible, there is no mention of an afterlife. There's no afterlife. There's no word afterlife. There's no I'm going to die and go to heaven in the way the church sells it to you. It's no different than the way they sell it to the Muslims. You know, how many virgins are you going to have after you die for blowing yourself up, if that's indeed what actually they tell them. It's the same thing. The church has subverted this beautiful, beautiful knowledge that God is existence itself. Again, not a thing. It's not a person, place, or thing, which is a noun, a name. It doesn't need a name to exist, whereas everything in the legal world must be proven and have a name as a person, place, or thing. So what is God is pure ambiguity. What is legal is pure property, right? If you're a part of this being, what the hell is property at that point? You're like, well, wait a minute. How can I have property of someone? It just doesn't make sense anymore. So when you understand that that's the meaning of the word God, the unchangeable spirit, the eternal spirit, and it says that you're to live forever, right? And people take that and they say, well, that's immortality. That's heaven. I'm going to go to heaven. I'm going to live forever. First of all, who the hell wants to live forever? but second of all, what does that actually mean? Because again, what is ever? Okay, Deanna, some people will say, I live for coffee. I live for sex. I live for chocolate. Well, I live forever, which means I live to protect and preserve God, Jehovah, existence, as it's created, as it is without man's interference. That is the definition of living forever. And that includes, of course, the notion that you're passing on your blood, you're having children according to the natural law, you are fulfilling the spirit of having children, raising them in the law to be protectors of God, protectors of nature as it really is. Because, I mean, eventually we're going to be shaken off like a bad flea infection if we continue on the path, and that'll be called God's wrath. But we do it to ourselves. We are our own devils, right? So if you can understand that when the word God is used, and it's meant for the word Jehovah, which is existence in itself, something that you can personify into an old man, you know, and tell the story of, but really you have to understand what it is in a complete way, then you can understand, well, if I'm part of God, then I'm under God's law alone, I take no other doctrine, I live simply in nature and under the natural law, I take no other gods and no other, you know, I don't do any of this thing we're doing in the legal realm, I don't go to church, I am the church, right, my body is the temple, as the Bible tells me, I am the temple of God, right? So these are all metaphoric kind of concepts that if you understand just that meaning of the word God, the I am, then you all of a sudden everything else starts making sense, because then you say, well, I better look up this word too. I better look up this word. I better look up this word. See, what we do is instead of following God's law, which is to say at all times, hey, I exist, or I am that I am, and nothing else. I've attached no names, no titles, no legal entities, nothing. I have no number. I have no barcode. I have nothing. I have no social security. I have no insurance. I am that I am. I exist in self-evidence. I don't need a legal name to prove my existence. That is what the Bible is about. That is the true nature of the law of nature, to be only in quote-unquote God or Jehovah. That is not religion. That is law. That has nothing to do with the ridiculousness and the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance that you see in all these horrible corporations that have been created around the Catholic or Universal Church. It has nothing to do with what the Bible is trying to tell you. And so, tell me, Deanna, have you ever heard God defined before? I mean, it's like...
Well, I think I would prefer to live forever, just not in this realm. I'd like to...
That's not a term that means forever. That's a term that means, like, I'm living for coffee. But you're living to preserve eternity. You're not going to live forever. You're going to live your life to protect ever, to protect society, to protect to protect nature, so that your children can continue to live. The Indians, most Indian tribes had a rule that they would always live their lives in respect of the ninth generation out. I have to do what I'm doing today to preserve the well-being and benefit of a child that I'm not going to ever meet. Nine generations away, right? That is the same thing. We're living to not eternally, not immortality, but we're living our lives to protect nature itself, which is just another word for Jehovah, right? It's mm-hmm. all that is being, and but instead we're ravaging it. We're destroying
the structure. I hate to say that we are. Because I think most of us in the truth movement are aware of Monsanto and how they're destroying the earth. We're aware of GMO foods. We're aware of vaccines. We're aware of so many things that we attempt to avoid. Well, and it is corporations. better
Oh, sure. Again, that, do you know what a lame excuse that is, Deanna? And I used to say the same thing. I'm not doing it. I'm, silence is consent, remember? Silence consent. You're sitting around here. Your law, if you understand this in the self, I mean, it's irrefutable when you really get it. What is the self-evidence of things? The self-evidence things is you're sitting back watching and saying, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to do anything to stop these artificial persons who don't exist in nature, who have no authority other than that. They're acting in person. They're breaking the law because they're not self-responsible. They're acting in an artificial capacity. Therefore, they're not responsible, and none of them go to freaking jail. None of them are ever – you are sitting back, and I'm not picking on you. I'm picking on myself. I'm picking on everybody in the so-called truth movement who's sitting back and watching this happen. We're at war. Are you kidding me? Your very structure of life is being taken away from you so that your children are going to grow up without oxygen. The oxygen level's falling. Everything's dying around you, and you're going to sit back and just say, well, it's not me. It's the corporations that are doing it. And
well, the truth movement is based on people warning other people about these situations. So it's not that there's a bunch of people who are sitting back doing nothing.
Well, how long are you in the warning mode? How long do you watch?
Sure.
This is what I'm trying to get across to you, is that there is no excuse. Like, again, metaphorically, you go and you stand up and you're like, you know, the pearly gates, all that bull crap that you hear about. You're talking to God, and God's going, well, you watched as this happened. You watched as this happened. You knew this was happening. You did nothing. You saw that millions of children are dying every day from hunger. You did this, but you never did anything. You talked about it. And see, that again, that's one of those things that the Bible keeps talking about. Everybody's going to talk about it, but who's going to actually do anything about it? You're the law of God, the law of nature says you must protect nature. You must protect God. You're part of it, for God's sake. Without air to breathe and clean water, we're all going to die. There's no way you can use that as an excuse before God, right? It's a lame excuse, and I'm saying that to myself too. And please don't think I'm picking on you or any one individual. I'm speaking out to everyone who has any inkling that things are about to go really, really sour for us all. We already have all these man-made diseases. Almost every problem is man-made. So obviously, the time for talking is well past.
Okay, what would you recommend?
Well, so it's going to sound strange to you, but this is where the love part comes in. Because you see, love, not ironically at all, one of the most interesting things I've found as I'm going through these dictionaries is I'm asking, well, how is love defined? How is God defined? But how is love? How is charity defined in the legal language? How is forgiveness defined in the legal language? Guess what, Deanna? They're not. These are not legal concepts. Forgiveness is the death of legalism. Love is the death of not being self-responsible. You know, forgiveness, charity is the death of money. So these are not terms that can be defined in a legal capacity. And that was one of the most interesting things. Like, wow, the only entry I found for love was belief. So the word leaf or leave actually means love. So if I believe something exists, it means I love it. So if I believe money exists and has a value, it means I love money. And what does the Bible say? The love of money is the root of all evil. Well, that's transcribed as the belief of money or in money is the root of all evil. And what that boils down to is the valuation that you put on everything because of money. Well, suddenly a man can be a slave. He's worth money, right? Everything can be put into a value, and yet money is worth nothing. So we live our lives, you know, oh, I have 300 ounces of gold. Oh, that's great. What's that gold worth? Oh, well, it's today it's worth $1,230 an ounce. Oh, okay. Well, what's it going to be worth tomorrow? Oh, well, gosh.
And really, You really have to look at the inherent value of it. You can't eat it or wear it, or it won't be shelled.
There's no inherent value.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Anna? And our guest is Clint Richardson, and you can download his book at strawmanstory.info. And I recognize that you're very passionate about this subject, about many things. and you're not yelling at us. You're just passionate, correct?
When you discover the truth, and trust me when I say the truth is not something that's often passed around in the radio circuit, when you discover the self-evident truth, the self-existent truth, which is everything not man-made, no, none of the concepts that we have, none of them, you know, even the concept of money, you know, we can argue all day about money, and yet, again, why does gold have no intrinsic value? Why did I say that?
Because yeah, we both said it. It doesn't.
Well, it doesn't because guess what? Intrinsic would refer to what is natural or of nature, of reality. In reality, in the natural law, in other words, you must learn to recognize everything as priceless. What's the big difference between the legal realm and the natural realm? The natural realm, everything is, there is no money, there is no price, there's no names or titles, there's no valuation. Mammon is a word that means valuation. It doesn't mean money. Money is just a tool of mammon. What the best way I can control you is to convince you that even you have a value in money. I can insure you, I can do all kinds of things.
Yes.
So once I get you to look at everything in nature and I say, well, that tree is worth $100, but that tree is worth $500. That bug, oh, let's squish it because it's good or bad or evil. But that bug, no. Everything is priceless. Everything has, there's not a value in money. There is a value in love, in life, in the ability to see everything as part of the whole, the oneness that we call Jehovah, God, right? That's the, again, this is not a, it's not a religion, it's a law. And you've got to get rid of the religion to even understand this, to be able to come around. So again, if I say, you know, my gold is worth this much, hey, guess what? Tomorrow they could raise or lower the price of the dollar to nothing. They can confiscate the dollar because it's their property. You're valuing something in someone else's property. Does that really make sense?
Right. and they've done all those things. Brilliant. They've gone out and they've devalued it. They've confiscated it. They've done all kinds of things because they can. Now, you mentioned atheism before.
Oh yeah, atheism is the silliest thing I've ever seen. Why did atheism pop up in the first place? And well, it's because anybody that's an atheist doesn't have the definition of God, right? Because as intended in the Bible. Okay, that's not my definition. Please don't misunderstand. I'm not telling you that this because that's what I believe. That's because I want you to understand what the Bible is trying to tell you, not what Clint is trying to tell you. This is the reason that the word God was used instead of Jehovah to take you away from the real meaning of the word, right? So,
all right. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. You may download his free book at strawmanstory.info. It's 1,147 pages. It's how many years would you? Well, you really can't put a time on it because you've been learning these things from the moment. Well, you said 9/11. You've been looking at things differently.
Full time since I quit the radio show, which was, I don't know, a couple years ago. I've been in this damn basement doing this this research and just contemplation. It was more than that, though, because eventually, as I put my full efforts into it, I started actually, you know, I was having insomnia. I wasn't able to sleep because I was getting answers to questions I hadn't asked for. And I my mind wouldn't stop. My mind would just kept going and going and going. I couldn't sleep. And I started, you know, words, because half of this is understanding what words mean. You take these words apart, you realize, holy crap, that's very scary. And so I'm taking words apart, you know, even in my sleep, waking up, having these revelations, having to go down and write about it. That was my life for a couple of years. And finally that stopped. And I'm able to sleep again because I feel like I got to the point where I sort of mastered the subject in a way that not so much that I know the whole law, or no one can ever know the whole language or the whole law, but that I can recognize what is real and what is fiction. And that is the real litmus test for the natural law. What is real and what is fiction? Okay, if you are putting your love, your belief, into fiction over reality, if you put your faith in a name over the reality, the substance that name represents, then you have fallen into the trap. You're in the matrix. You're literally believing in a lie. And at the point where you begin to recognize what is self-evident, what is real as opposed to what is fiction, that's the point where you win. That's the point where you get to where I am, where you're like screaming at the top of your lungs for people to wake the hell up, because you're all worshiping corporations. You don't know it, but you have chosen, you have elected false gods, and that's an amazing understanding that doesn't come easy. I started my book out with a quote about how difficult it is to receive knowledge of that in a truly spiritual way. It's so difficult because you have to give up everything. You have to lose your ego. And that's what the Bible is about. It's about losing that ego. Stop saying, I am Clint Richardson. Stop saying, I am this, I am that. The Bible says never, never say that you're something that you are not. There is no such thing as a doctor except as a fictional title in the legal realm. This is so important to understand because once you accept the name, the title, the number, the benefits, the Social Security, everything, then you're under the false law because these things don't actually exist. What are you insured in? You're insured in money. What is money? Money is debt or evidence of debt. You don't have any real insurance, and you were warned about that, both in the Bible and by the Founding Fathers. Never give up security. Never give up liberty for security. Social Security, for God's sake. It's right there in the title. Sure. And now Social Security is in 150 countries. And it's going to be in every country because the whole plan right now is to give everybody a person, a straw man. It's to register or tax everybody.
Right.
That's the point.
Right. Oh, my gosh. So yes.
What is atheism? Now that you know the definition or the intent of the meaning of the word God as used as the highest sense, atheism is that which is opposed to that, or I don't believe or love that, right? Okay, let's break it down. How do you completely demolish atheism? Well, if God is existence, right? God is everything that is in self-existence, is all of nature, is all of the universe, as one being or one essence, however you can look at it. It is eternal, and it will go on with or without us, right? Whether Earth survives or doesn't survive, all of the universe is still going to be there, and that is essentially God, and we are a part of that, right? Everything that is not man-made is God, okay? So that's self-evident existence. You can't deny it. You can't. I mean, you can, but it becomes ridiculous once you kind of see what self-evidence really is. So, okay, atheism is literally defined as the non-belief in the existence of God. The non-belief in the existence of God. What did I just tell you that God means? Existence.
Right.
Atheism is the non-belief in the existence of existence. Let me say that again. Atheism is the non-belief existence of existence. Exactly. How can it be? It's because we're so dumbed down that we didn't even bother to check what the word God means before we said, oh, no, I'm an atheist. That cancels out atheism. Atheism is a non sequitur. It's a non-starter. It means nothing. And what it turns out to be is just another trick. You could say it's a trick of the devil, right? That's that which is adversarial to God, or i.e. sure. nature existence. You could just say it's simply a way to sell nihilism, anarchy, lawlessness to people by saying it's cool to be an atheist. You don't believe in God. Come on. But wait a minute, that means I don't even believe that I exist.
Right.
And haven't you found, Deanna, lately that everybody's talking, you know, there's the flat earth meme, there's the holographic universe meme, there's the multidimensional, you know, physics and all these, everything, all the memes today, all the new religion is basically nihilism, non-existence, as opposed to what religion is supposed to be, or i.e. the law is supposed to be, which is the protection of existence. At, you know, you go to a campground, you're supposed to leave the campground in better shape than you found it. It's just the natural law. That's just the natural law. Extend that out into the entire earth, the entire population, the way we treat each other. I'm going to leave you in a better shape than I met you, or vice versa. Because guess what? The law is the law. The natural law says no man should be wealthy until all other men are wealthy. That's just another way of saying that there is no wealth. That wealth can only exist with purposefully intended poverty, which means you're sitting back all nice and comfortable while people are sleeping out in the streets.
Which right? is really bad. I mean, yes.
Right, because, and why? Because we don't have, see, charity is, again, love is a verb. Charity is a verb. It's an action. It's something that's happening right now. We don't do charity because the legal version of charity is what? An artificial person, an association or a corporation. We give them money as if that's going to solve anything. They invest that money and maybe spend a little bit. You know, here's a blanket to hope you stay warm. And what's the point of charity? What's the point of the church giving charity? Is it to better people's lives, or is it to keep them in a state where they're still able to be taxed, still able to be controlled in poverty? Because, you know, my opinion is the church's version of charity is simply to keep people in poverty.
Right. Or to keep the money coming in. When
because none of us are, right, none of us are self-responsible. None of us are being responsible following the law and picking everybody else up, making them more wealthy and better than us. If everybody was doing that, well, then, hey, there'd be really no problems. There would be no homelessness. There would be no – I mean, that's the thing. We've all become so irresponsible because, hey, I can just give money to a charity. I don't have to do charity myself. Oh. That's not what the Bible says. That is not what the Bible says to do. The Bible doesn't say to give money to a church. Why would the Bible – Christ, well, I want you to imagine this, Deanna. Imagine if Christ went into a Vatican bank. You know, he went in and he overturned the money changers' tables, right?
Right.
Don't do commerce in the temple, right? So imagine he went into the Vatican bank.
Oh, my goodness.
Right? Imagine if Jesus Christ, as portrayed in the Bible, of the figurative, you know, metaphoric version of Christ. Imagine if he appeared in one of our churches today. Let's say it's the corner church, maybe a Baptist, whatever. What would happen? Well, he's in a robe. He's been wearing that robe for a few days, and there was no deodorant back then. There was, you know, you probably stank, and he's got you know, that musk, and the clothes are dirty, and he looks probably like a bum compared to our standards today.
He'd be arrested.
Right. He comes in. He's like, I got the word of God, man. He'd be thrown in an insane asylum or at least kicked out of the church as a homeless bum.
Sure.
That's how far we have fallen, right? Because we are looking at, we'd be looking at that person, and I say person instead of man, because we're not looking at the man. We're not listening to the man. We're looking at his persona, his fiction, his what is his reputation? What is his appearance, right? We're ignoring the man and the needs of the man, and we're saying, oh, he's not one of us, because we're not acting at all in Christ. We're not following the law of the Bible, the natural law. We're not doing it. Otherwise, we'd welcome him. You know, Christ's friends were always like the homeless and the lepers, right? So right. Welcome him, and we'd lift him up, we'd feed him, what we do is ridiculous, and we all know it.
The lepers and those individuals were his friends because he befriended them. He went to them.
Exactly. What do? We sit in our homes and watch TV about them.
Right.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to donate $2 a month. I'm going to get a folder in the mail that probably is fake about how much this child is.
Are you going to donate a bunch of money and they're going to make a shopping center, a big six-acre shopping center?
The definition of charity in the legal realm is a corporation. The definition of charity in reality or in the spiritual sense is love. It is showing your love. It is showing your ability, your responsibility to make sure that every man is wealthier than you and healthier than you. If everybody was doing that instead of competing, which is what we're taught to do, well then, I mean, I don't know if you can imagine what life would be in that case, but it would be beautiful.
Sure.
You know, so you said, what can we do, right?
Yes.
All these scripted radio shows always go, hey, the problem is this. Oh, my goodness. Well, what is the solution? The solution is to buy my products and do that. No, I'm not here. I'm not here to sell you anything. You take my book for free. You don't have to ever give me anything. I'm not. That's not why I'm in this. I'm in this to find those of you out there that are listening who recognize what I'm saying is true and self-evident. Who actually want to learn the law, there's a point where you're going to have to make a choice. Because like I said, the whole goal right now is to identify legally and assign a Social Security number, International Social Security Administration of the United Nations through the World Bank to every man on earth. That is the biblical mark. They say the mark of the beast. Well, you got to understand, yes. that's not what the Bible means. There is not a Antichrist character. There's not one man that's going to become the Antichrist. The Bible says there will be so many Antichrists you won't know what to do with it. And again, it's referring to us. We are acting Antichrist. That just means we're not following the law of God, the law of nature. That's all it means. That's what Antichrist is. Antichrist is a word that means vicar. Anti is in replacement of or vicar. That's why the Pope is Antichrist, the Queen is Antichrist, because they're anointed as the Christos, or the Anointed One. They anoint them in oils, they go through the ceremony, and they become a Christ-like figure. And I have all kinds of quotes in this book, especially Volume 2, that show over and over, you know, the Pope being said to be the Christ on earth. He has the power to change the law, to change the Bible, to change the word of God, right? It's very scary when yes. You realize what the Catholic Church really is, which is the universal. And I found out that any denomination you're in, if you say think of it this way, Deanna. Most of the religions are Protestant religions, all the different variations, right?
Yes.
What is a Protestant? What is a Protestant? Anybody ever stop and say, what's a Protestant? Why are we saying it that way, first of all? It's a Protestant. I protest the church, the mother church, and so we're going to go be a part of this other church, which is a Christian church. Well, I got some news for you, folks. Go look up the word Christian in the Bible. You're not going to find it except in three locations. And each time the word Christian is used in a bad way. It's an insult. Christ never said, be a Christian. Christ never said, worship me as God. In fact, over and over, Christ was like, man, I feel so helpless before my Father. I don't know what to do. What do I do? I'm tempted. I'm not God. But we're taught through the church to worship Christ as God, because that way we can worship the Pope as God, as Christ. You see, no one benefits from worshiping Christ as a man, as an actual living man. We're supposed to use Christ as the example to follow the law. But if Christ then becomes the Pope, well, then the Pope sets the law, and it's anti-Christ. You see, it's crazy when you start understanding how this whole system works. And it was the Pope, of course, through his bulls or his sanctums, that separated the secular law with the ecclesiastical law, so that you had, you know, church and state. You had now the ability to go against in anarchy or lawlessness towards the holy law, the spiritual law. You now have the secular realm where you can do anything the hell you want. You can start killing people, do crusades. As long as you have the protection of the legal realm, then the church can do anything it wants.
Sure.
Make no mistake, the church has always been the government. There's never been a separation. Separation is not an annulment, it's just a divorce.
Sure.
Yeah, they're still together. They're still incorporated together. No church exists in America without being a corporation of the state, which means they have to follow the legal law. Whole point of being a follower of Christ is to not be bound by the legal law, because it's anti-God, anti-nature, anti-natural law. You give up all rights to be a citizen of the United States. So you start realizing all this stuff, Deanna, and this is what my book explains, not because it's my opinion, because I've documented in triplicate all of this stuff I'm saying. I don't want people to be adversarial to what I'm saying. I want you to be contrary, because you're supposed to be contrary. It's how you're trained. You realize that public school is to make you public-minded instead of private or separate from all this, these lies, this fiction, right? It's to keep you in that legal matrix, that artificial womb that's called in the in that one document. I can't remember the name, but yeah, it's I'm passionate because I found the truth. I found the self-evident truth that cannot be denied. And I still look at all my compadres in the so-called truth movement who talk about nothing but lies that are confirmed as truths, which is the entirety of the legal structure, all the money, everything in legal realm is a lie that is legalized into or licensed into a truth. And the word, and that means, of course, truth. When you say legally something is true, in nature, it's a lie. You see, and everybody's stuck still arguing and debating over what is the correct form of the lie.
Right.
And it's getting out of hand.
Sure. Oh, goodness.
Okay, so I never got to the explanation of what a straw man is.
You kind of did. You talked about the wall. And,
it's a legitimate term. That's why I wanted to say. So just to go through the dictionary, most of this is – it's a bunch of different dictionaries, Black's Law, different editions, Webster's, etc. But so we'll start with a dummy. And remember, we're all dummies. A dummy is one who holds legal title for another, or a straw man.
All righty, we're going to a quick break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson, and you may download the book at strawmanstory.info. Clint, we do have a couple calls here.
Great. The only thing I guess I want to say is when you get down to the nitty-gritty of this, you realize that there's two forms of existence. There's the real existence, obviously, self-existence, nature, you and me, without any names, titles, etc. And then there's artificial, you know, the quote-unquote legal matrix where everything is recreated, you know, resourced, and we're all become human capital. So the question, and the strangest part about the Bible is that everybody talks about this too. It's one of the reasons people don't like about the Bible is that it talks about death. Everybody's being put to death, 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 and people are rising from the grave like it's a freaking zombie apocalypse, right? Lazarus,
sure.
Jesus, everybody's coming back from the dead. But how is that possible? Well, that's not referencing your real life. That's referencing your straw man. That's referencing your status in society. You see, sure. You have to crucify that. You literally have to die or let your straw man die, which is called a civil death, in order to enjoy a spiritual life. Civil death destroys spiritual life, just as spiritual life destroys civil life. So when you're acting in this fiction, you are experiencing civil life, but you're also experiencing spiritual death. And so the concept of death is purely metaphoric, and in the end of this book, or the end of this chapter, yeah, it's actually at the end of the book, I highly recommend at least everybody read the last 30 or 40 pages, the epilogue, because it's going to show you that all this sovereignty, land patent stuff is all false. But it specifically talks about the execution of the contract of citizenship. We have to die. I mean, literally, we have to be born again into nature alone, get rid of all the fiction. That is the notion of legal death, execution of contract, quit claim. You literally have to opt out of that system in order to be free from its law. But in order to do that, the only way the state is going to recognize you is if you live a monastic life, a life under the law that you follow religiously, because it's always going to come back. The Jew, the attorney, the devil is always going to come back and want to put you into a contract. And the only way the devils, which is another word for attorney, the only way they can control you, okay, in Scotland, an attorney is called a devil or a devil master, depending on his status. That's official. It's right out of their law books. And deviling is actually in the dictionary. You have to literally, I mean, it's what the Bible means by dying and being born again. You're killing your fiction. Your straw man must die. You must take all connection from it, and that means solution or end of contract. That is where you start to have the spiritual life, but only if you follow the law. The second you sign a contract, the second you respect that fiction again, you're right back in it.
Right.
That's why you must.
They make it seem like a benefit for you to be in their system.
Well, it is a benefit if your intent is to break the natural law.
Right.
It's protecting you. It's if your intent is to be in the old law and ignore the new law, the Christ, well, then yeah, it is a benefit because you don't have to be responsible for yourself. You can take insurance. You can do all these different things. You can pay for your crimes, or you can spend time in jail for your crimes. Either way, you're paying because time is money.
Sure.
Right? So you're going into pricelessness, timelessness. No history out there. There's no history in nature. How would you record history if nothing has a name? How would you? I mean, it's this beautiful concept of being born again, and all that means is to go be childlike again, not to believe that you are something you're not, not to respect all these flattering titles and personhood and all this fiction. Get it out of your head. That's what the Bible is about. This is why I say it's not religion, it's law. That's what natural law is to go back to your source. Don't have any fictions, don't have any artificial things, because if you have something that is artificial, that means you are property of another. And you're law.
All righty, we're going to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take your phone calls. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Clint Richardson. And you may download the book at strawmanstory.info. Clint, shall we take some phone calls? We've got some people lined
up. Certainly, I'm sure I've pissed some people off, so let's have it.
Oh, I don't think so. Okay, let's take Alan in Texas. Alan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Clint, you have not ticked me off in the least. All I can say is, wow. I mean, I don't know if I'm Clint Richardson or Alan right now. I mean, because, you know, this is what crawls around in my head, you know. I grew up my whole life, and like I said, I've been outdoors my whole life, you know, and always had this connectedness with nature. It's, you know, I've always felt it more at peace and actually, you know, more a part of life, if you want to call it that, you know, when I'm out amongst, I guess you want to call it the animals of this world, you know, supposedly the non-thinking beings that we're all surrounded with, you know. I've always kind of, you kind of made me realize it. I've never really looked at it as, you know, as I am, but more like it is. You know, it's
well, you know, Alan, this is why they call it a vacation. This is why people just go out of their way to get away from the city, go into nature, and take a vacation. Why do they call it a vacation? Because you're literally vacating yourself from the legal system and going to a place where you're literally not there anymore. You've gone to what, for all intents and purposes, is the definition of utopia. Utopia is defined as the middle of nowhere. Why is it utopia? Because it's untouched by man's designs. That is the beauty of nature, or i.e. God, because you can commune with it without anything, any distractions of man's designs. It's a beautiful thing when you realize that. And like I said, it changes the whole Bible. You suddenly realize the Bible is telling you, come back to me. Come back to God. Come back to nature. Come back to reality. Stop participating in all these fictions and lies. It's beautiful.
Exactly. You know, I could tell you stories, you know, about things that I've seen in nature that just, you know, just awed me. You know, I mean, see, you know, 11 degrees, I'm sitting up in the Ozark Mountains, you know, bear hunting. And I don't know if it was because of the warmth of my butt on the ground or what, you know, but there's all of a sudden this star-nosed mole crawls up between my legs, up out of the ground between my legs, you know, and I've got heavy gloves on, so I pick him up, and I'm going, wow, you know, just looking at him, and he's crawling around, and without killing him, I can't hold him tight enough, you know, to keep him from crawling through my hands, and I look at him for a little bit, and I set him back down on the ground, and he goes back down in, and he's gone, you know. The wonder, you know, that's out there, you know, just a connect. I do feel a connectedness with it, you know.
Sure.
And it's what you're saying is just, I miss you being on the air. You know, I loved listening to you when you were on, and I'm going to have to get your book somehow. I've purposely kept myself out of the matrix that is the internet and the computerized world. You know, I know that makes me a Luddite to a point, but, you know, I love technology, but I want the technology that's withholding from us that would make us freer, you know, be able to have, you know, our own free energy so you could heat and cool yourself and cook your meals and whatever, you know, without having to be a slave.
I'd be glad to send you, like, anybody that doesn't have the means, that, like me, I don't really like reading things off the computer. Anybody that doesn't have the means, if I finally get this book printed, I'm having little issues with that, but I'll be glad to send it to you for free. I can do that because I'm asking other people who can afford it, you know, for a donation in exchange for a free copy of the book. So I mean, I'll send it for free. This needs to get out, is what I'm saying. Take it free. You know, I'll gladly send it to wherever you want me to send it, as long as you embrace it and use it and start acting according to it, not just take it in and just watch the world go to hell when you know you
Clint,
can be no, doing
I'm,
something
I'm,
about
I'm
it.
Fairly active. And I don't have a whole lot of people with friends that I would, I guess you call them human beings. I don't know. I don't even see them as the same species most of the time. But I talk to anyone and everyone I come in contact with, and I'm basically a kind of a pariah in my community, because even those who say that they're awake don't like hearing the real stuff, because I've kind of immersed myself into this, you know, and I've kind of, you know, not saying that I've totally figured it out. I don't think anyone really has, but I've done a lot more, you know, in-depth, you know, introspective study than a lot of people I know, and I'm almost pariah amongst the people who call themselves patriots.
Right.
You know?
You gotta realize everybody, almost everybody I talk to says the same thing. See, this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the like-minded. I'm looking for those who want to eventually escape this thing.
Sure.
So that we can all actually, you know, protect each other while we're trying to live under this, you know, true law, if you will. I don't know how that's going to happen. I understand that it's a monastic life. I don't know if that means it has to be a monastery or not, but I do understand that's the only thing that the law actually recognizes as being protected while still being an outlaw, not following the legal law, but following God's law. And I look forward to that. But I tell you, everybody has the same problem that you do, which is trying to talk to people. And I hope that this book will give you the vocabulary, the understanding, and then as a tool, you can, you know, just give it to people. Pass it on. I hold no, you know, copy. It's never for sale. It's always free. I hold no copyright. Just get it the hell out there.
Sure.
Okay. What you've been doing today is It's kind of what I like to call pulling the pin and swallowing a grenade, and your information just splats. But your information seems to splat a lot more comprehensive than mine tends to most of the time. I'll leave you with one little kind of comical little chuckle. I've got a young cousin who's getting ready to take his bar exam, and I've been talking to him the whole time about, you know, what he's getting into. And I said, you know, I told him, you know, look up what an attorney is, And he got on and on his little rectangle and he Wikipedia'd up. And an attorney, you know, basically one who changes his liege depending on who's paying him. And he said, oh, can also mean a scrotum shield. And I said, oh, you might not have, should have told me that one.
Okay. Well, thanks, Alan. Take care. Okay, let's go to Fred in Iowa. Fred, welcome.
Fred, do you remember me?
Yes, Fred.
I could never forget a voice like yours, Fred.
Exactly.
How you doing?
Okay, I'm doing well, and I know that I cannot take up a lot of time. I don't know if you recall, about 2 weeks before you left RBN, and I called in, and you had one time told me never to call your show again. We tangled again. Actually, the number is up to 4 now that people have said this to me. I've always got one. We'll see whether I want to or not. But our conversation was...
Well, you know what, Fred? Let me interrupt you right there, because since then I've learned that the only real way that any of this can change is total forgiveness. I don't care how many crimes you've committed. I don't care if you're a senator, a congressman, or the president. We have to forgive everything, because the second that we got to put that guy in prison. Well, we're invoking the legal system. Then we have to get out of it. We have to forgive. So, hey, I forgive you, and I hope you forgive me.
Well said, and I do, and I accept your forgiveness. You know I can't eat up a lot of time. I'm 80 years old now, and I'm a little bit slower, you know. But if you recall, I haven't built my boat or my yacht yet to sail around the world. And when I told you about that, you said that you would like to come with me.
That's so funny you say that.
The offer still is, if I ever build a boat, the offer is still there. Now, I told you I wanted to be the oldest man to build his own boat that sailed around the world nonstop, single-handed, and made the best time. Well, then I also said that was for ego and pride. But I would rather make a leisurely cruise with you, and then we could debate, argue, talk. And if we didn't kill each other at sea, because you have to be at sea, especially if
If you ever accomplish that, I will at least sign on for a couple weeks of journeying anyway. So, hey, absolutely.
I'm going to drop a website on you, and then I'm going to drop a bombshell on you.
Well,
okay, the website,
we're running out of time. So.
Okay, the website is Theism and Atheism. Theism and Atheism, and I'll spell the author's name. Sabot, it's S-U-B-O-D-H. Pandit, P-A-N-D-I-T. You got it?
Okay.
Okay, now, I, in all truth and sincerity, I'm going to drop the bombshell on you, Clint. I would leave my number with the board off if you cared for it, but anyhow, then this is love, and, you know, I have affection, I have feeling for you. But here's the bombshell I'm going to drop on you, my friend, and I hope you remain my friend. I strongly suggest that nobody read your book, even if it's free. Because any Christian that is weak in the faith, it's going to carry them the wrong way.
Well, Fred, I think I recommend that you read the book first before you go recommending not to read the book to anybody else. So anyway, thanks for phoning in. But we do need to move on. So let's go to Rob in Chicago. Rob?
Hello, Deanna and Clint. And that was a good suggestion, Deanna. Somebody should read, review, or get the information so they start suggesting one or another what to do with it.
Well, let me just... In response to that, and again, I don't get angry with people anymore for these kind of things. It's a worthless endeavor. I start the book actually by saying this is an equal opportunity offender. It's going to offend everyone. Because why? Because if you're living in a lie, including calling yourself a Christian but not following the law of Christ, as he set out in the Bible, the law of God, well, then you're basically lying to yourself. You're carrying a flattering legal title that was created by Caesar, and you're going to a corporation giving it money. You're not a Christian. You're not a true follower of Christ, so quit calling yourself that. If that offends you, because it is the truth, and anybody with a half a brain can see that it is the truth, well, it is absolutely. This book is offensive to anybody who is living in a lie, because the truth will always be offensive to anybody that's lying. Anyway, sorry, go ahead. Oh, do we have a bad connection?
Rob, are you still there?
Well, yeah, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, you're breaking up a little.
Hold on 1 second.
He's gone.
Did we lose Rob? Oh, okay. Let's go to Wes.
Yeah. Thank you, Dan and Deanna. And, wow, this is quite a work. Thank you, Clint Richardson, for the work you've done. I've been on to the Geneva Bible thinking it might be a little bit different. It was issued in 1560, and I guess King James did not like it. Neither did Queen Mary of England, who put like 250 Protestants to burn at the stake. That's why they went to Geneva. But from what I understand, this Geneva Bible really inspired the documents of America, the Declaration of Independence and Constitution. Of course, you cast a different light on it, but I guess what I was calling for to ask you was the Geneva Bible of 1560 maybe a little better than the King James of 1611?
The reason I tell you to go with the King James again is because it's law. It's the one you're going to swear on. It's very important to understand that. But I caveat that by saying I don't care what Bible you read, as long as you're doing your due diligence, realizing that the English language is a language that causes you not to understand the Bible. Go back to the Romantic languages, the Latin, the Greek, the Chaldean, the Hebrew that is in the Strong's Concordance and all those different lexicons, Easton's Bible Dictionary. There's all kinds. I mean, even Webster's 1828 Dictionary is my favorite dictionary because it explains words both legally and religiously and commonly. You must do the due diligence to discover what every single word in the Bible actually refers to in its original intent. English is always going to cause you to think the wrong thought or to, and that's purposeful. So I say lightly that it doesn't matter which Bible, as long as you're going back and seeing what the original meaning of the word. So whether you're reading the Geneva, the 1611, the Companion Bible, There's all kinds of Bibles. Some of them have great, you know, footnotes and stuff. Get them all, because you're actually going to you're going to want to compare so that you can see which authors are trying to deceive you. And make no mistake, the King James Bible is deceitful, but you've got to understand one thing, my friend, and that is, in order for them to get you into their system, you have to voluntarily leave the natural law, which is the Bible. The Bible is the foundation of the common law. It's called the unwritten law, and all the maxims of law come from that are foundational. But once you leave that, once you respect persons, including the state, any corporation, any municipal corporation, whatever, as soon as you start respecting things that are against the Bible and you contract with anything, then you have left. So you see, what I'm trying to say is they give you the Bible because they have to tell you the truth. It's up to you to discover what that truth is by translating that and understanding the intent of the words. It's up to you to do that. There is no excuse before law or God for you not to do that. And now that you have the truth, you have the law, and you break it, you are voluntarily abandoning God, if you will, nature, and you're entering into the legal realm and a different law. You're volunteering. I don't care what anybody out there tells you, all the anarchists, being a citizen is a voluntary act. And that's the point. It has to be voluntary. They have to give you the truth.
Okay, gentlemen, excuse me. We're going to a quick three-minute break. Thanks for your phone call, Wes. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Clint Richardson. One may download his free book, and I recommend that you download it and actually read it at strawmanstory.info. And it looks like we have one more caller, so let's take Tom in Utah, but we'll have to make it really quick. Tom?
Yeah, I apologize. I tuned in late. Is this author, is he close to Utah?
He's in Utah.
Around, but not in, however you say it, yeah.
Anyway, I apologize. I didn't get to hear the whole discussion, but I made a friendship with a Hugh Nibley as well as an R.H. Charles who did work on the pseudepigrapha. So I'm curious, if you have a moment, I'd love to see what your thoughts are on both of those gentlemen's work as well as what we dug into in my issue.
I've not read their work per se, but I will say one thing that I find really interesting is that there's no original Bible. That's what's called a simulacra, a copy without an original. We have no original Bible.
Right.
And I find that to be, so we always say go back to the Greek, go back to this, go back to that. Unfortunately, there's nothing really to go back to as an original, but I do know what you're referring to. And I wanted to say one last thing. The meaning, and again, people are going to say, oh, that's blasphemous, because you just haven't read the Bible. You haven't looked at it, done your due diligence. The notion of the return of Christ is one of the most important concepts in the Bible. There's all kinds of returning gods. You've got Aquarius, you've got the Pisces, you've got all the signs of the zodiac. They're going to return. They're gods, and they're going to return according to the old religions. Big deal. Doesn't mean anything. The return of Christ is a reference to the law, the word son, the word law, and the word word. So the word of God, the law of God, and the son of God are the same thing. The only way Christ is going to return, of course the church is going to have you wait forever, the only way Christ is going to return is if you manifest Christ. Each one of us manifests Christ, meaning manifest, and as the Bible says, become the sons of God. That's not me, that's the Bible. We must manifest the law of nature in us. That is the return of Christ. It's not some supernatural thing that's going to happen. We must become Christ-like. We must follow the law, the Son, the Word of God. That is the return of Christ. And again, uncovering these mysteries that the church has taught really helps you be able to embrace the Bible. That is something that every one of us can actually accomplish if we put our minds, right, our hearts, our souls to it. So,
would you mind, since I've been blinded, would you mind going to my website, Gassing America? At the bottom is my phone number. When it's convenient, I would really appreciate visiting with you, because it sounds like we're walking in the same footsteps.
Gassing?
Right. Yeah, gassingamerica.com. That's an issue I've been doing battle with, but I got, like I said, I've been closely associated with some really serious and really intelligent Bible scholars, and they basically have your same sense.
All right.
They read it.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. Clint, thank you so much for being on the program today. Thank you for all of your hard work. It's amazing. Your book is amazing.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
All righty. Take care.
Take care, guys.
All righty. Bye-bye.